Hello and welcome to The Undermined, a podcast about brute war AI development. My name is Shonko, your host from MakingComputerDoThings.com. Let us begin. Welcome everyone. My guests tonight are Antiga.
Hello.
And a Scandinavian contingent. First of all, Micro from Denmark.
Hello there, everyone.
And Hannes Bredberg from Sweden. I almost got right the pronunciation. Don't hate me.
Hello, everyone.
All right. And we have some things to discuss. And maybe first, let's do BWA API 4x4. And Hannes actively worked on that. And there are some changes. Hannes, would you mind telling us about those and the decision behind that and your great journey and hardships and blood, sweat and tears?
Oh my, so it all started with I rewrote LATCOM, latency compensation, that is. I don't know, do I need to go into detail into what that is at the moment?
You're free to. I mean, I think you should, yes.
Okay, so latency compensation is this thing which allows, as soon as you execute a command, it will reflect on the game data. So like if you say tell a unit to move somewhere, is idle, will instantly go false, and lots of other things like reserving of resources and supply, etc. So the old latency compensation just wasn't written to manage. It just didn't work with the higher game speeds and latencies because it wasn't written in a way which allowed for that to be handled. So I just completely rewrote it. There were a lot of other bug fixes, like minor things. And all of these went into 4.3 a few weeks ago. And then it turned out 4.3 was crashing a lot, and so I fixed those crashes. And then I just went through the issue list on BWAPI, the GitHub repo, and I just fixed whatever I managed to do. So we have like 20 miscellaneous bug fixes and the latency compensation rewrite and some other nice features. Like we finally time client bots before... tournament modules couldn't get the time how long a client bot took to run. And I just think it's a good thing to measure because we could time module bots, but not client bots, so they got away with running really slow before.
What do you mean by client bots? I mean, we all know what it is, but maybe in the audience someone isn't. Maybe if we can save one child, then it was not for nothing.
Yeah, I guess I could explain that. Most bots, I think, are module bots, which means they are DLL loaded by BWAPI, and client bots are not loaded through a DLL. Then they instead use shared memory and just run through a safe interface. And yeah, so like there's two alternatives for how you interface with BWAPI. It's a module or client, and we just happen to have separate code for those things because they're very different in how they're handled under the hood, even though your code looks the same.
And of course, this version is backwards compatible, right?
It's source compatible, but you have to recompile your bot.
Yeah, basically that's what I meant. I read about something, the unit ID is changing. When a unit disappears, you don't... you access its ID differently or something like that. Did that actually change?
No, that hasn't changed with BWAPI 4, and it won't change with BWAPI 4 because we consider that a breaking change, so we're holding off with that until BWAPI 4.
Yeah, that's understandable. Let the bots must make use of that functionality. I was even considering doing that.
Speaking of BWAPI 5, I was talking with Neatcat, and apparently it's public knowledge now. So Neatcat got hired through Pro Unlimited at Facebook, to work on BW API 5. So there's a full-time developer that will be dedicated to that project and assisting with it. I'm sure you've already been working with him, Haynes.
But yes, I have. He's already started committing to the BW API 5 branch, actually, since about yesterday, I think.
And this is really outside of academia that there's been a developer working on BW API 5, so it should speed development considerably.
Yeah, one would hope.
This is very great news. We should rejoice and wish Nightcat the best. And we hope that we can see BW API 5 really soon now.
Yeah, and thank you to Facebook for, of course, sponsoring the work and paying for a developer to work on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess Facebook deserves a shout out for that.
So will this mean that that Facebook is serious about Broodwall?
I would think so. That's what it seems like. If they're like actually paying a developer to sit down and work on the API, I would assume that they think that they want to work on Broodwar AI more than the SE2 option.
It's just hard. It's hard to say from us on the outside, but you know, it seems like a good sign. So,
it's just a prank, bro.
But with the latest Google involvement in StarCraft 2, it's I was thinking that Facebook would do Facebook StarCraft 2 also, but apparently not. But that's it's a good thing, I think.
I think they are not doing it on purpose. They are avoiding interfering with each other on purpose. Everyone benefits this way.
Yeah, it allows them to essentially compete in the same area, but in separate games, which means they're both trying to do the same thing. They're just using different platforms to do it. We talked about this before, but really, if a bot is capable of beating professional level, high level, you know, top tier humans in one, within a few months, it could probably be redone to do so in the other game. It's an analogous sort of challenge in a lot of ways.
I'm becoming aware more and more APIs or API projects for other games, especially real-time strategy games. So we are not alone in the universe anymore. Also, it is kind of hard for a company and they have to tread carefully because I think we discussed that when they entered SSEIT, the Facebook team, I mean, they didn't win that basically, and there was articles about amateurs beat Facebook Urdur, and that's just not fair, and this kind of attitude can ruin a company's reputation in that field, and that's just bad.
Yeah, and that's not really fair to them. You know, they're paying for development time with BW API 5. They released half a dozen different open source tools that the community is using. They put their bot through open source tournaments, and especially the work on Torchcraft, which bots will use in a great deal in the years to come to produce a new generation of machine learning trained bots, is really quite spectacular. So you know, in my opinion, they've been very supportive. So,
yeah, they're doing huge things for the community, and they're losing to people who have like established bots that have been competing for many years at this point. So, I don't think it's that strange at all to come in and lose your first game. Like, you're not going to expect that from anyone.
Also, the bot was limited hardware-wise. The first version that is of JPI, that the Facebook bot.
Right, because SSEIT doesn't use GPUs.
I'll be really interested. You know, of course, AID this year has GPU support, and I find it most likely that if they continue and do another effort, which it seems very likely that they will, that we'll see that at AID. Because it's the only tournament this time that supports GPU. So, but we'll have to wait till, what is that, July, August?
I don't know exactly. I think it's around August or September. I should do the Google.
Also, Dave Churchill wanted to do this new ladder tournament where he wanted also to make use of their GPUs. So I guess that JPy could compete in that one also.
Yeah, that's also in the works. I actually talked to him about that. He's kind of confined by the academia timelines, so it moves a little slowly, but he's getting there. I think that that much is public information.
So, totally understand academia and things going slowly. So I'm currently, I got a 3-month wait until my dissertation results come out.
Also, while we are on the topic of BW API, Jaegers actually did a great tutorial for beginning developing bots. Check it out. I mentioned that on my blog, but I will give the link for the podcast article as well.
So is this for Java?
Yes, yes, it's for BW API. But I encourage everyone to make tutorials, especially for beginners, because the barrier to entry is too high at the moment, at least in my opinion. So do more tutorials and do more support for more languages, because then we will have more stuff to maintain and bitch about. So I mean, more opportunities for new developers. So yeah, do that, please.
Yeah, exactly. I'm planning on making a BW API for C++ tutorial, but with the new project setup, which 4.4 allows, where you can actually integrate the BW API lib builds into your.
Do we really need more languages for BW API? And are all the other languages effective?
I think we do. Because there are a lot of developers who are not developing in C++ or Java and don't want to learn a new language just for the sake of competing on this Framf project.
I think that, you know, of course, C++ and Java have long been used, but I think that there's a lot of potential in the Python Scala family because of its ties to historic machine learning tools and programs. You know, within machine learning, probably 75% of the software or more is written in Python, which is a huge portion of the total. And I think that that's an area that's could use a little more work.
That just means we need better C++ library.
It does, yeah. But there's historical weight there that, you know, that's how it is.
You're right about that. Python, almost all machine learning libraries are using Python.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Dan actually talked about this a little, and his conclusion was Python is very slow. If you think Java is slow, you haven't worked with Python. It is great for some applications, but in general, maybe it's not the best language for bot development. That being said, I think with some library work and optimizations, it can be, as almost any language, but that's the state of things right now. And
yeah, it's kind of unfortunate that its practical performance is so slow, but all the vast majority of historical machine learning research has been done in this language is sort of problematic.
But you can maybe use more than one language for your project. It's not unheard of.
That's true. I don't know. Have we seen any language combo projects yet? I'm trying to think of one and drawing a blank.
Not in this space, I think. Unless you count the shell scripts for my bot included. Speaking of bots, AITT is just concluded, and McRae has put up a great cast on YouTube. I was just watching that before the cast. Did you watch some or all the matches of this year's AITT?
No, I haven't watched it yet. Did he announce the results already, or do we have to watch the video?
I didn't think results were out. You might have seen the video from last year and thought it was this year.
Yeah, I'm not sure you're right about that. I'm looking at the website right now. It's registration by April 1st and submission by May 1st. It hasn't even started yet.
Yeah, you've watched the video from last year.
Yes, indeed. I just checked the date.
Well, ripped in peace. Yeah, I was kind of worried there because I was like, oh, I haven't started making my boss yet. That's kind of worrying.
I will just edit out my shame. I absolutely won't because this was hilarious. So, speaking of AITT, did you submit anything this year?
Well, I'm gonna submit, but I haven't yet.
No, and I don't think I will because, yeah, well, I'm not really a skilled programmer that can fit a lot of stuff into a little space like others.
Well, the size was increased to 5 kilobytes because of something TSC Mood said, I think. So at least it's not as restricted as it was last year to 3 kilobytes.
It's also islands and multiple maps. So you get more space, but the complexity required just went way up.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You have to now manage whatever you need to manage on the island map.
I mean, most full-size bots, their map analysis systems are bigger than that. Most full-size bots, I mean.
Oh yeah, like orders of magnitude large.
And also, to the best of my knowledge, AITT is just started out as a joke. And look what it has become.
Yeah, I'm still just waiting for the no semicolon here. It will be
pretty fun. It's really a programming challenge at heart, and there's quite a few people here who love that sort of thing. So,
I hope MacRave won't file a hurt feelings report on you, Micro.
No, there's a lot of activity around this tournament, and that's fine. If anybody is having fun with it, that's fine.
Antiga, you're right. This is a programming challenge and nothing more, basically, because you can't really develop a fully fledged bot in that space.
The people I see being attracted to it are the best. Some of the best programmers in the community are some of the people who tend to like to do it, which is really quite fun. You know, I don't know about you guys, but watching. Especially like if you've ever looked at T.S. Schmoo's code, it scares me a little bit. He's one of the few people that I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't even read half that.
Yeah, that's the same. I'm a little bit sad though that Christian himself doesn't submit a bot. I wouldn't even have anything against if he did, just because it's mostly a coding challenge tournament more than
Yeah, it's really hard. If you run a tournament, it's often best to not compete in your own tournament. It doesn't look good. So
I
would love to see him,
But I'm just thinking that this kind of a tournament would be an exception, but yeah, I understand why he's doing that. Because this tournament is mostly for fun, right?
Is there any prize?
No, I don't think there is. I was talking with Grath. He had some interest in maybe trying to cast the games. He loves terrible bots and games and bots, so he had some interest.
And then it's a good opportunity to cast stupid bots then.
Actually, if you pick games at random, that's a very good opportunity to pick potato games.
That's true.
Most of the games are not terribly interesting, unfortunately.
Yeah, you will have spaghetti-coated bots doing potato games.
It's all about the carbs, man. So I'm curious how many purple bots will be entered this year to AITT.
I don't know. He might do a couple, he might do one. It's hard to say. Dan loves that sort of stuff, so.
There are no rules for how many bots you can submit to AITT?
One per race.
Oh shit.
So, I know, right?
And no random bot. I trust Dan will submit all three races. He is kind of the good programmer type that you mentioned, Antiga.
Yeah, he's pretty good. You know, having worked with him, with bot development with Purple Wave and stuff. You know, I suggest a change and half an hour later it's done. And he's like, here, try this. You know, almost no one else is that fast.
I mean, it is not a coincidence that Martial Art Mastery is ranked in dance.
But will he really have time to do three bots, even for this small tournament?
Nobody knows. You have to ask Dan and try and bribe it out of him or something.
In theory, you could write one piece of code to be all three bots.
Yeah, but it's different races, and they have different...
That would increase the size. So.
I know, but it would also be very cool if you could make a 3 kilobyte bot play all three races, or a 5 kilobyte bot play all three races on island maps.
I think that you may have just created a submission for AITT next year.
Oh, God.
Guidelines.
What about this year?
No, the rules don't change at the last minute, and they really shouldn't. But it's interesting. You know, those sorts of things and increasing complexity are things that will go into future years of AITT. So.
Well, there are things like race.getTransport and race.getWorker. So you can pretty easily write a generic code. The only hard part would be like the builds. That would be the only thing that would differ between the bots if you write it.
So you could transport your workers for every race.
You could write generic code for that.
If Dan submits a bot for 5 kilobytes and he can play all 3 races, I will give him the victory immediately.
That would be an interesting AITT where you submit only one piece of source and it plays random battle style. And it's just a random versus random tournament.
It'd be really interesting, yeah, I agree. I would like to see random only fastest map ever next year. I think that would be a good combination.
Yes.
I wanted to ask what kind of coding challenges would you like to see? What you listed is sounds very fun, but it's not strictly a coding challenge. Any other suggestions? The crazier, the better.
I would like to see some submissions for... the Diablo AI tournament, which deadlines will be this summer. It's really sort of a different thing to StarCraft. The API for it is available. The main thing is that it's really long-term decision-making, which is very difficult to do for a bot. So sort of a different approach.
Well, StarCraft is also some kind of long-term decision-making.
Yeah, it is. Not to the same scale. Like the Diablo AIT, a single game could be, I don't know, 30 hours for a complete playthrough. If a bot was successful, that won't happen. But you know, it's a multi-hour per attempt. And one small decision early sort of compounds. So it's pretty difficult to complete.
Yeah, I've watched some of the games that Nutcat casted when his AI is playing and when his self is playing, but do you really plan like 30 hours in forward?
Yeah, so in order to complete all three difficulties on Iron Man, when you only go to town once between the levels, and you know there's no death is allowed or it ends the run, to complete the entire run probably takes 30 to 40 hours.
Yeah, but do you plan all those hours in forward?
A human plays that many hours, not in one shot. You know, they break it up into chunks where they do sections of the game at a time. A bot would have to play through the entire thing, and we don't have a way to speed it up yet. That said, most bots don't even make it an hour before death.
Yeah, but this, I watched his cast and it's really nice. Well, I have been playing Diablo a long time ago, and it's really interesting to see his bot playing.
And yeah, it's a different type of, you know, it's the RTS versus the RPG roguelike challenge, essentially.
Yeah, you have to optimize for different styles and of play, and there are some different races, of course.
Yeah, and Diablo wasn't made with different gameplay speeds in mind. StarCraft were kind of made that way, but we were able to hack it to have insane speeds. But for Diablo, it wasn't even a concern. The code base is ancient. It's Diablo 1 is released in 95, so it's basically older than Java.
Yep.
Yeah, and it was just released a new version of Diablo 1 with new updated graphics on some. I can't remember where it was, some download platform.
They have the rights for it now, and they're doing some small updates and improvements, which is really appreciated. And it's really seeing a resurgence now. And also, the API works on the GOG version. We have already tested that, so.
Yeah, that's what I heard. They haven't changed the binary layout at all in itself, so everything just works out of the box, which is
that's awesome. Yeah.
So it's an opportune time with the game being re-released. Essentially, there's quite a lot of viewership of it on both Twitch and YouTube, and it's quite popular. And if you want some exposure for a new sort of challenging AI development project, it's perhaps a good thing to look into. If you have any questions, let me know.
So which big company will go into Diablo AIs?
I don't know. I have sort of thought that it might be a company that develops roguelike or games that would like an AI for a game that maybe was played in reverse. Where like you create a dungeon and a roguelike player controlled by an AI explores the dungeon, for example, I think it'd be a really good development platform for something like that.
That's a very interesting concept to like actually have some kind of AI development scene for those kind of games.
Yeah, so instead of being the person who plays the game through, you're the level designer, essentially, and you make the floors in sort of a dungeon, and then the AI plays through it, right?
You're thinking of Dungeon Keeper, aren't you?
Right. You know, a Dungeon Keeper-like game, but the AI that is way smarter, right? It's a good development platform for something like that, Diablo AIT is.
Speaking of that, I imagine the ultimate 50 Shades of Nerd achievement would be an AI that plays the Dwarf Fortress.
Oh man. Sorry, you're bringing up some really interesting Dwarf Fortress memories. So.
We are gone way off topic, but please do tell.
I don't know. I don't even want to think about how much time I put into that thing. But, it's really one of the best games of that style that's ever been developed and is a real treat. And if you really want to earn your nerd stripes, play Dwarf Fortress.
Yeah, definitely. But I haven't even thought about making an AI for that. But I'm very much considering it, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. And, it has a lot of overlays with the Diablo AIT type project. The underlying systems are not really that different. So,
actually, Dwarf Fortress is coming to Steam with graphics. I thought it was a joke, but it's not.
Graphics? Dwarf Fortress?
What Harrison? Yeah, who's that?
Yeah, I mean, ASCII Master Race, right?
Yeah, that's part of the fun. You gotta use your ASCII output and watch the Matrix on a window on the right while you play Dwarf Fortress on the left, and you'll look like an uber elite hacker dude.
I don't even see the code anymore.
Exactly.
You have to do green letters on black background, of course.
Oh yeah, just like in bootleg.
And War Fortress is one of the only games that has a book written for it called Dwarf Fortress for Dummies. It is an actual 300-page manual how to play the game. Not to win or be any kind of effective or in it, just how to play.
It's
Dwarf Fortress basic tutorial YouTube video. 4 to 2 hours.
Yeah. What? Oh, no joke. It's a major effort. You know, it's something else.
I think I've been missing out on this game. I don't know even know what it is.
Google later.
Do you know about maybe RimWorld or something like that?
No, I don't think so.
Well, okay, maybe, yeah. Basically, sitting, building, similar.
Microwave is having his nerd stripes removed here.
Yeah.
Sir, I'm gonna have to confiscate your nerd license.
It's okay. I can live without.
So, I think a good candidate would be Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup, if you know about that. Have you heard about it?
No.
Nope.
Yeah, so the full sentence is the good candidate for AI research. Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup is, well, a dungeon crawl game. It is surprisingly complex and well-maintained and has an active community. It is an epitome of roguelike, so it has permadeath, it is very hard, and it's just insane. I mean, losing is fun is one of the mottos of it. The phrase originated from the War Fortress, but still it very much applies there. And better yet, it is open source, and it's written in C++. So developing an AI for it would be considerably less work than it was for StarCraft. API, I mean, not AI.
Yeah. It's interesting. When we looked at games to develop an AI for that would be like a roguelike, we kind of looked at a whole bunch of them, Nick and I did. But we kept coming back to Diablo because it was Game of the Year and it sold so many copies and almost everybody knows the franchise. So it sort of took over by default. There are others. But part of what feeds active development is having a community that likes to watch and is interested. And so having a well-known game franchise that, you know, most people recognize is kind of helpful in perking interest and keeping people involved. So.
Yeah, DCSS, Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup, has a very active community. I just looked at the site and there are 100 online games going on right this moment, and there are watchers. And I think we should aspire, a StarCraft community, to this kind of activity at least. We might take that as a good example how to build a community around the game.
It's cool that it's an open source underlying engine that helps a great deal. It's just hard to get sort of the critical number of people involved in the community at the size that's required to power development.
We might just get there. So let's go back on topic, or at least try to. I wanted to talk about programming challenges, and a great subset of those are combat simulators, I think. The thing is, everyone approaches this problem slightly differently. I'd like to hear your thoughts. What do you think about combat simulators, their usability, and how would you change or how would you develop a new one?
Well, objectively speaking, you know, we have half a dozen combat simulators. But they kind of all suck. And I really mean that in the nicest way possible. Almost none of them deal with terrain. A lot of them treat the units like they can stack on top of each other. And they don't simulate a lot of the aspects of the game. They simplify it, essentially. which is a sort of, I guess, the point of a simulation. You simulate in order to save on computing time for doing it for real that you really couldn't do. But because of that, there's the combat simulators, and then there's a whole host of things you have to do to deal with the outputs, which can be as complicated or more so than what you do with the simulator, the simulation and the outputs that come out of that. How you handle them, and then how you integrate that into the bot, and then what decisions does the bot make from those choices, that information.
Yeah, the combat simulators we have basically today, the only thing they allow you to do is just feed them a bunch of units and throw a result out. And what you do with that is completely up to you. And basically, like 99% of using a combat simulator effectively is just tuning, like adding your own constant, multiplying this by that, just to like, because everything is specific to your bot and what you're trying to do. The only thing that we are trying to do when we make combat simulator libraries is that we allow authors to not have to rewrite the combat simulation code, because that's something everyone would have to write otherwise, but we can't do anything wider than that, because that's everything that the bots have in common.
We had SparkCraft made by Dave Churchill in the Welsabot, but it was buggy and it was so slow. The point is that we, like Fab from Hannes, is very, is very fast, so you can use it so many times during each frame, and this is really nice.
And the frame portion of this is extremely important, because StarCraft runs in frames. So on a given frame, like in terms of frames per second, for people who aren't really aware of this, you have to do all the things for your specific bot on that frame. And you can do things every so many frames, but then the bot isn't as reactive. So you have a very limited amount of time to make decisions. And it's pretty difficult to fit a lot of stuff in there and not time out or lag the game.
Functionality-wise, Antigo, this is mostly a question to you as a maybe the most experienced player, human player, human vs. human player among us. What do you think? What are the hidden variables that commonly does not get into account when simulating combats?
I mentioned it briefly, but terrain is a really big one. The second really big one is unit collision. They don't account properly for, you know, what if there's a small gap? Almost all of the combat simulators only spit out semi-accurate results on a blank field with nothing. And really only units that are non-overlapping or trying to pass through the same space. Those are two areas that they do very poorly at. Some of these are alleviated with air units, which in some ways makes air units pretty apt for combat simulator use.
And there are also things that the bot's doing properly too, like units in the fog. You can't predict when your enemy is going to get reinforcements or whatever, and bots are really bad at doing that at the moment.
Yeah, and that's the other problem is, you don't know what the other unit person has. You can only see what the bot sees currently. So you have to have another system before the combat simulator or after it that accounts for what your opponent might have that you can't see actively at that moment. Because what happens is that bots say, well, I have more than the other person. They attack and then realize that all of a sudden that they have less, so they retreat. And then they can't see anything enemy. So they think that their opponent has an army value of zero, and they attack again. And this is really traumatic, especially against siege tanks on a cliff.
You also have something like a microing. I know that the author of Lucatus added some microing of dragoons in Fab.
Yeah, but you can't accurately predict in neither your own micro nor your opponent's.
And the other problem, too, is a lot of these combat simulators, they spit out a set of numbers, and then you have the aspects that those hook into in your bot, and almost everyone, unfortunately, ends up with numbers that come out of the combat simulator that are then multiplied, subtracted, added, dealt with in some way in basically an Excel list or a CSV or something that they have to tune manually by hand. And it's a really horrible, horrendous process. And there are some interesting thoughts about how to solve those issues. But there's only a couple of even prototype implementations outside of pure machine learning trained approaches. So I don't know. And another thing too is the results that are hand-tuned like that, they apply in certain maps in certain situations, may not apply across different races. You may need different number tuning for a cross-race bot, which leads to even bigger number tables. And when you change something, you have to go back and retune all the different aspects. This is something that haunts a bot like McRave terribly, because he has so many magic numbers and multiplications of values in his bot that if he makes one change, it's a 2-week process of like 40 hours just to retune the thing to make it run properly. And it's really rough.
These kinds of magic values are probably the first thing you would want some kind of primitive machine learning for.
Yeah, and I think Crazio has sort of an interesting solution where he collects a lot of values of data and auto-tunes them. But he's one of the few that has something like that.
Yeah, this bot is closed source too.
Right, but that's just from what he said, that it's capable of doing some of that auto-tuning. And I've seen some attempts at systems to do that with pre-training, but none of it has worked very well in a practical sense. You know, doing it by hand with a human eye has, up to this point, been the best, unfortunately, and it takes a massive amount of time.
That you have a bot like CIDR that doesn't even use combat simulation, you just make the builds and make a bunch of units and use scouting to know which how strong the opponent is.
Right, and similarly, Iron sort of falls into a similar camp. But I think that's may perhaps only be possible with the Terran bot in a lot of ways, due to everything being one push, and they're getting punished hard by using these hard coded no combat simulator systems. You know, if you harass a bot like SATA, you know, that's why B Reaver beats it sometimes with one shell and one Reaver, because it sends its entire army after everything. And so it can't ever move out and push and kill B Reaver. And B Reaver is a multi-year old bot, but sometimes it still picks games off of SATA, which is number two. So, you know, while they're existing for now without a combat simulator, to me that's a stopgap measure, you know. And especially if you play it versus as a human, as soon as you figure out that it's all army everywhere all the time, you do a little bit of harassment and it just explodes. You beat it. But, you know, sometimes it takes a few games to figure out, but humans do. It doesn't take long.
You could also do something where you try to guess the opponent's build and then guess which and how many units you can build in the future. And use that number to make your own strategy.
Yeah, I think I saw a bot doing something similar. He tries to somewhat predict what happens, and then he throws all of the enemy units into FAP, and then he throws every type of unit and every type of upgrade into it and sees what just works best. So he has a prediction system and just uses FAP to like decide on a build to do himself.
I'll have to look up what bot that is later. It worries me. You know, we see a lot of these really sort of prototypey approaches that, at least on the ladders, do quite poorly historically. And you know, most of the top ones, it's all hand tuned.
Yeah, I think it was Cunibot, if I'm remembering correctly. And so it's not that strong of a bot in the base, and I think that's the reason we haven't seen more about it.
It sounds like a really good idea, but apparently you might have some bugs, or it didn't do its implementation good enough. I don't know, but I think the idea is not bad.
The other part is, you know, I think this is, like I said earlier, this is a really good area for machine learning. The problem is really to tune these numbers automatically. You're talking tens of thousands of games, and that's a lot of expense as far as hardware time. Really, only some of the larger players can afford to do that.
Right. Someone really should set up some kind of a Vasa-like environment, but just for running your own bot, and you can like rent like 100 StarCraft hours for a few bucks.
I'm gonna quote a famous quester and say, "Is it though?" Because you kind of have can have cheap computers do this. StarCraft does not have much hardware requirements.
Oh yeah, just ask your local school or whatever for extra computers, and they will have spares. No question asked.
I mean.
The machine learning stuff isn't as cheap, but you can run a lot of games of StarCraft for cheap. But if you want to use GPUs and train the number of games that's really required to do it well, you know, you're probably talking tens or hundreds of thousands of matches, you know, per attribute. It's not as trivial as it seems.
Right, but you can have one place for the GPUs and then a cluster of simple computers running the games themselves.
I mean, it's an honest question, I'm not disagreeing, but from the top of my head, just a bunch of Raspberry Pis and GPUs, it's considerably cheaper than having fully fledged computers for this. I really don't know.
It would be great if anyone has a learning as a service thing, where you could, throw your bot in and...
Yeah, I've considered making such a thing since I have a fair amount of servers at home. Like, I've got like 20 CPU cores I could rent out, but I just haven't had the time to make the service yet. Maybe I should talk to Bytekeeper to see if I could just fork Basil instead, if that would be feasible.
Yeah, I remember you wrote about that stuff a long time ago.
Back to an earlier point. Seda, I think that bot was a local maximum. It won AWID, and it was a bot that beat the bot meta at the current point in time. And after it appeared, quickly a lot of people and a lot of bots began to exploit its weaknesses and counterplay it. And since it's mostly hard-coded, it is harder to adapt and will be harder to adapt in the future. So it was a tool for the job at one time. At least that's my impression of it.
Yeah, there is, if you read it carefully, there's some interesting stuff in there that is not immediately obvious. Even though it's hard-coded, there are the basis portions of it that are set up to allow machine learning add-ins in the future, and they've done a little bit of that, but they're laying the foundation work. So I expect that it's going to get a massive amount of machine learning integration in the years to come. That's the direction that I see from the portions of it that I've looked at. So even though it doesn't have a lot of that now and only a slight amount, I think we're going to see it really transition quite quickly.
Yeah, we will see.
I'm looking forward to that, actually. And so we have like Samsung with CIDR and Facebook with JPI. And I don't know if CIDR will support GPUs in the future, but we're in an interesting time at the moment.
All right. Last topic for today that we briefly mentioned, Gret's StarCraft casts on YouTube. And it's a great thing that we have someone who is interested in board games. Please, people, be more interested in board games. I commend you. But this is an example of exposure we actually want. And just demystifying this whole bot scene, because people seem to think it's something so esoteric and no ordinary human can comprehend this. Also, Regarding this topic, multiple people have suggested to me to broadcast this podcast on Twitch, which I think it's a horrible idea because the edited version is not the same as the raw version and the recording, and it's maybe better for some things to not see the light of day. But it gave me an idea. What is the thing we should or could broadcast like a live stream? I mean, bot games are usually not terribly interesting, but maybe there is some subsection of this that we can make interesting. I mean, weekly Nepetacasts are a good example for this, but those are not live. Those are also an edited video.
I've sort of been working on this a little bit. So, of course, I like to stream versus the bots that are under development that do well versus humans. And really, the only two bots that have been designed to play humans are Crazio and the Purple Destiny development version, which is not really available to the public yet, but very interesting. So I've been focusing on that aspect. I've talked with a number of people. Chobo Swaggins is going to play Purple Destiny here at some point. Some of the other people from the L Masters group, and I've got a few other people lined up as well that are going to take a shot at it. With how well Purple Destiny has been doing against me in play, I'm very impressed there, and I think that there's some opportunities for both streaming and promotion in these areas. And if you are interested in playing Purple Destiny and you're a listener or something like that, I'd be happy to help out with the process. So, you know, I'm a 1750 to 1900 MMR player. I'm not terrible. I'm not great. But Purple Destiny is winning about 30 to 40% of its games against me on average, which is higher than any bot historically, mostly due to it using random to do a lot of cheese, which is very difficult to block all of it. It's really, really interesting sort of subfield.
A thing I was thinking about and might have mentioned in the cast is a kind of a dissecting plays type of thing, where we get not so great but still enjoyable bot games, and from a developer's perspective, just analyze it and maybe show the relevant code bits even. And for a more technical audience, like do a live debugging session or more like a brainstorming how to approach that problem. But the problem with this is I can't do this alone. I need someone, a bot developer, who has a bot and has bad games and has the time to select those bad games and has the time to be online at the same time as me and just talk about this. That being said, I haven't completely given up on this, but usually this takes a lot of time organizing and doing it too, and time is a commodity that most developers lack. What do you think of this idea? Would you watch it?
I think it's a really good idea, but the thing is that all of us are programmers, we are not casters, so we don't have any. A few of us, like Antigua, is also a caster, but all of the developers, they're developers, not casters, and don't have any experience in that sort of area. And also, like you mentioned, it takes a lot of time to set all of this up.
Did you have any experience as being a podcast guest before?
No.
It's the same thing. If it's not measures up to the greatest casters alive, then what? Who cares?
There is sort of an interesting subset on Twitch on live development streams, which are fairly interesting, actually, where people sort of contribute ideas and help people work through problems. And some developers are really tight to do social stuff and teamwork, and some like to sort of sit alone and concentrate. And if there's a developer that is really sort of enjoys that social aspect of development, there's probably some opportunity to be had there.
Right. I've actually played around with this a little bit. I have live streamed and recorded me programming, and I've had a fair bit of viewership, but it wasn't really anything that caught on, so I kind of didn't do it. But I would love to see more development streams and with bots specifically. Yeah,
you know, really to do it correctly, you know, you got to have a face cam, be willing to talk, be willing to play music, you know, sort of do it the way that a normal Twitch streamer would. And you can kind of look at some of the other development streams that are done in that way. And they're kind of social and interesting. You know, people like to talk to the people as they're developing, say, well, I spotted this problem, what do you think about it, and what about that? The hard part with StarCraft bot development is it requires sort of a knowledge of BW API first, which sort of limits the community. And I don't know, it's not something like web page development that's more universal.
I think it's a good idea, and I will definitely watch it, but I wouldn't do anything like that myself, because, well, when I'm programming, I have all sort of thoughts in my mind, but I don't want really to speak about them and have people asking questions and stuff like that.
You gotta kind of have the super social personality for it, and really that's only a small subset of developers that do. Not everybody likes that, and that's okay.
In my experience, first of all, this wouldn't be a live coding session. This is just dissecting the problem. The author would say, okay, what went wrong? Maybe I forgot to add something here. Some magic number is not great, but not actively coding and showing that process. Just the thought process behind it. Also, this social thing is interesting because I find that most developers are not actually antisocial or against public appearances. I would characterize it more as selectively social. They don't want to appear before most groups of people. And that's okay. Everyone has his or her own group, and that should be respected. That being said, I think this kind of appearance would fit more people than you would think.
It's actually fairly interesting. There's been a fair bit of research into what is the most efficient way to develop software as far as the amount of social interaction with team members that are involved with the project and size of the team and all sorts of things like that. But software development does benefit from a community quite greatly. That said, you know, too much involvement and you spend more time on the social part than you do on what you gain from the community. But being isolated, on the other hand, you slow yourself down by not interacting with other people and learning from their mistakes and repeating them. So it's a trade-off.
Right. The thing I discovered when I was doing programming on Twitch was that I just sat down and basically all of the time I wanted to do things, I just spent showing off what I made and explaining code to people. And I think that you have to strike a very good balance there, because most of the time when you're developing, you're just like staring at your code, not understanding why it's not working. And that's not really that entertaining, to be honest.
I enjoy discussing problems. I enjoy making plans. I absolutely hate when someone sits behind me when I'm coding. So these are quite different things.
I wouldn't mind being on a podcast about that, or voice only cast, but I don't want my face on a camera.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessary either. I mean,
yeah,
maybe.
I didn't have a face cam when I was doing it. I just had my voice and music.
Yeah, it should be voice only. That is my feeling. An avatar, like a cartoon avatar or something at the maximum. I don't think this is the type of thing when face associated with it would do much benefit.
But it could be a really good test to show off who has the really most ugly code in our bots. A lot of us are bragging on Discord about how ugly our code is.
And there's actually sort of a subcategory here that's also interesting, is reviewing your own development process is, as a developer is really quite interesting. One of the things that I actually seen done in software development courses is require that the students record an hour or two of themselves developing and watch it and try and understand where they could be more efficient and make improvements. And that's something that almost no one really does, but you can really see a lot. You don't see it until you watch yourself develop. And it's really an interesting thing to try at some point.
I'm kind of Schrödinger's developer, but just by looking at me, you can't tell if I'm working or not. Seriously, it's impossible. Until you ask me, and if I actually worked, then I lose my train of thought and I will get angry.
In my case, I like to develop for, 20, 30 minutes, and then, I will be thinking about what I'm developing, and I go get coffee or something, and I'm thinking about it the whole time, or go take a shower, or, whatever. And, or it's amazing how many problems I've solved in the shower, in the car, when I woke up in the morning, or whatever, that I didn't solve by staring at it. It's interesting.
Or sitting on the toilet.
That's another good one, yeah.
Yeah, and everyone has a different process. Someone enjoys like the distractions and chatter and looking after memes while programming and doing things in parallel. I absolutely hate it and I want to isolate myself as much as possible when coding. But yeah, everyone has his or her preferences. But I think software development methodology is a whole large rabbit hole and also a great topic in itself. And maybe we shouldn't discuss it here.
I'll just make one final note about it. Some people download the wikis and stuff that they need and they plug the internet out of the back of their computer. So there's the other extreme there too.
I mean, feel free to discuss, just we don't have the time or inclination to do that in detail. And with that, I think I'd like to conclude the cast now, if you didn't bring any topics with you. Shitposting is not a topic. With that, I bid you goodbye. Ciao.
Take care. See you later, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it and like to support me, my blog, or my podcast, be sure to check out my shop in the description. Thank you and goodbye.